Good evening, I'm Neil Pringle. I have much pleasure in welcoming you all here on behalf of the Mechanical Engineering Branch and the System Engineering Society. As you already know, Lachlan's going to do the presentation tonight and some new opportunities in space, I think it went out as.
Yes, that's the correct title.
So I'll hand it over to Lachlan.
Thank you, Neil. Thank you, it's a delight to be here this evening. Neil didn't mislead you, he gave you the correct title, New Opportunities in Space. I took the liberty of elaborating on that title, which makes it somewhat cryptic, which is Hyperion, Gaia, ABO, New Adventurers in Space. Because I look at any new opportunity as an adventure. It's a chance for we as engineers to undertake a project as an adventure. It's a chance to rejuvenate ourselves, to challenge ourselves, members of the team, to actually strive to do new things, to go forward. And they are new things. All three are space probes or space related. They are all new. And whilst feasibility studies for all the projects, in other words, all the projects have actually started, there's enormous opportunity for other Australians to get involved in this project because they will grow over the next 10 to 15 years. And they will create opportunities for people to conduct research, for jobs, for teaching, for learning, basically in all fields that are related to our profession in engineering. Well, what are they? Hyperion. Hyperion is a space probe that's been designed in Australia with a Dutch team to go out to the very edge of our solar system. That's no small undertaking. When you consider that Cassini has taken something like 7 years to get to Saturn with the Cassini-Huygens exercise, to go further to the very edge of our solar system, right out to that edge, it's going to take quite a long time. 30 years to be exact, which is scary when you consider that how slow these things are moving. In actual fact, they're moving very fast. And it highlights that we need to find new propulsion technology if we are to go further and explore space into the future. Hyperion started last year in about November 2003. And what was it? It was to design a spacecraft that would go out to the heliopause, to actually look at the shockwave that forms around the edge of our solar system. Believe it or not, there is solar wind out there from beyond our solar system. And that wind, when it encounters bodies and gravitational components, it's actually bent around that system, that body, that solar system, in the form of a shockwave. And it's exactly like a supersonic shockwave, which is absolutely quite fascinating. And when we're taking on these projects, one of the passions that we need to have as engineers is to look to the future. So Hyperion was geared to take some undergraduate engineering students, throw them into an environment where they work with scientists from the European Space Agency in the Netherlands. And because Australia is not an island alone anymore, we're not this continent that it takes 3 to 5 years to sail by sailing ship to get to the other side to send a letter, we need to work in the international environment. So we've combined this RMIT team with the Netherlands team from Delft University of students. And RMIT researchers also joined in that project so that we could actually gain skills to help other young Australians go further. The design team, these students were volunteers. Three quarters of them would be in the top 5% of both universities, and the others were guys that were interested, struggled a bit with the maths, but they wanted to be there. So people that joined this team were there because they wanted to be there. They were passionate about what they wanted to do. And that gave the advantage that they could all learn from each other's skills. Communication. How do you communicate from one side of the earth to the other. Well, fortunately, the internet is fantastic. All of us here that have spent a fortune on eBay will know that you can send money anywhere in the globe. So equally, why not information? And video conferencing online, the technology has advanced so much that we can have intelligible and sensible conversations as though we're just having a cup of coffee with a good friend. It's no longer that you speak, count to 20 before they even start to reply. You can have it with virtually zero delay, and that's courtesy of actually developments by the Victorian State Government through a broadband conferencing node setup that's being set up internationally, but Victoria is well ahead in that area. If we go further, what are we talking about? We're talking about designing a probe to launch in 2015. Not too far away. Foreseeable future. How long is this mission going to go for? I mentioned it would take 30 years for this probe to get to the heliopause, to the edge of our solar system. And that's going flat out. That's with the advanced technology, the fastest technology that we can offer here on Earth at the moment. And if that doesn't signal a need for all you guys out there that dabble in propulsion, we need people to find a better way of getting off this rock and going from one star to the next. The techniques we use are too slow. We've got to find the technology to push those vehicles further, faster than what we can even imagine at the moment. We've got to make the Star Trek universe appear tomorrow. Not in science fiction. It has to be real, and it has to appear in the 21st century. The other thing about it is, what's it going to cost? How much is this thing? What's the budget? We were given a budget of $400 million Australian, or thereabouts, which was allocated. And with this project, it was actually a genuine feasibility study, because ESA wanted to know whether or not it could afford and whether it was technologically feasible to actually design this vehicle and actually send it out. And the project is actually being reviewed for further use. Hardware, launcher, use something that's European Space Agency. So naturally it's going to get launched on an Ariane, and should it get built. And the hardware has to be off the shelf, preferably a European supplier. And that's interesting, because we now have a free trade agreement between America and Australia. And up until that free trade agreement being signed, companies could not bid for NASA contracts. Now we can, or it's breaking US law. We don't have that arrangement with Europe, because we're not a partner of the European Space Agency or an affiliate. And it's something the Australian government's going to need to look at the future if we're going to become serious players in the development of the space industry. What's Hyperion going to do? Well, there's the specs. It's going to be 50 kilos. The space for payload, that's for your instrumentation. What can you carry for that? Gosh, it seems like not very much. Will you be surprised at what we can actually discover and learn and actually measure? And we can actually look for the origins of life out on the edge of our solar system. It is possible that at this shockwave, there are organic compounds that are actually building up in this zone, trapped in the shockwave, and not actually getting through, or very little of it is actually getting through into our solar system, because that shockwave effectively acts as a barrier. We were limited by what Ariane could actually put up to actually go, Ariane 5, to actually get out to near the Oort cloud and the heliopause, to a dry spacecraft mass of about 500 kilos. But the total probe with its to actually get into low Earth orbit with fuel, etc., is about 7,000 kilos, so that's not too bad. But like everything, there's a trade-off. If the heavier you make it, the more systems you put in it, the more fuel it needs, the more electricity it needs. And we were asked to limit our power demands below 80 watts because we have to have this device actually being able to operate basically 30 years away from our sun. Where are we going? What are we looking for? Well, this is a pretty good little map. You can actually see the heliopause around the outside of our solar system, and the solar wind shockwave is sort of builds up in a exaggerated ellipse around our solar system. And we want to go out to the bow shockwave. We want to get right out on there where all this interstellar breeze is coming and bringing interesting compounds and elements to our doorstep, so to speak, and find out what is really out there and what are the intimate constituents of our universe. We've measured spectra. Are we getting the full results? Let's go out there and have a look. We want to look at the plasma properties near the termination shot. Helium hydrogen levels, how high are they? Is it extremely low? Are we talking only a few millitor? Or are we talking higher levels? More importantly, what are the organic levels? Are the seeds for life out there on the edge of our solar system? Because if there are, and if they are being carried through our system, that gives us more incentive to actually go and look for planets that may actually be habited by something. Where are we going? Well, we're boldly going to the Hyperion. The heliopause. And you can actually see this scale, which is measured in AUs. AU is the distance of Earth to the Sun, astronomical unit. And we're going out to basically 100 times that. So we're going out to 100 times the distance of Earth to the Sun. And to go that short distance, it's going to take us 30 years. We're actually going to go out past where Voyager has gone. And hopefully we can actually push that probe out further to the Oort cloud once it's, if it's still alive after taking 30 years to get there, 5 years to gather its information. If it's still capable of working, then there is a fuel reserve to actually push it out to the Oort cloud and actually go where no space probe from Earth has ever gone before. And these distances are mind-bogglingly enormous. If you want to put it into context, you're talking, 4 to 6 days to go to the Moon. You're talking 1.5 years to go to Mars by a sensible route, 7 years to get to Saturn, 30 years to get to Heliopause. That's a long way of listening to, are we there yet, are we there yet, are we there yet, from your little computer. What's best? Should we use an ion drive? The best ion drive that is available to be built and developed here on Earth at the moment? Or should we use solar sails, which are very popular at the moment? There's a lot of studies going on as to their capability. Well, if we do a direct comparison between ion drive and solar sails, there's not a lot of difference, except in cost. A magnetometer, fairly essential. You want to actually find out what sort of mineral content is out there, what sort of magnetic field strengths, iron particles that may be out there. You want to look at the energy particle composition. You want to find out what active components are out there. You want to actually look at what is the building blocks of each particle that you actually encounter there. So hence, it is good to actually have a spectrometer. An infrared spectrometer is a fairly important unit, but you can also, with the flux radiometer, do most of the same work. And unfortunately, when we did the budgets, we found out that with the for the solar wind vehicle to actually work, we didn't have in the mass budget adequate capability to run the infrared spectrometer. It would have to be left out if we went for solar cells. Other than that, they're an identical space vehicle. What's the difference? The solar sail, driven by the solar wind, will gradually, from our sun, will gradually push the spacecraft, accelerating it out to the heliopause. We're talking a vehicle that has a span of something like 60 metres. Very large wingspan, or sail span. The price is that it has to be very low mass. We're talking only about 8.4 kilos. And we don't have the power, because we're reduced in mass, we can't put sufficient solar panels on it to power all the equipment. So you're limited to about 22 watts of sensible power for that mass budget. That also impacts on how you can actually send data back. And so we're restricted to a very slow data rate of about 12 bits per second, which sounds pathetic when you talk about modern computer data transfer. But bear in mind, it's going to send this data continuously for 30 years, so it probably doesn't matter that it takes an extra week or month to give you a picture. The ion-powered one, heavier. It's got to take a small plutonium reactor on board, and that involves a risk in launching it from Earth, unfortunately. It's good as long as it doesn't come back. And after 30 years, it'll get there quicker, only just. It'll actually go out to 150 astronomical units in 30 years. It's a little bit slower. The solar wind one will actually get out there a little bit quicker, so we can actually travel further. The cost, $450 million is the estimate that was validated by the student teams. Both teams actually worked cooperatively together, but they did separate costings to critically evaluate the two projects. And the costs were within about $10 million, which was pretty good. So they used slightly different techniques, reassuringly ended up with a very similar result within the ballpark of what you would expect. Which one do you want to go for? This is the problem. This is what ESA is faced with now. ESA is actually, both are viable, both will do the mission that the European Space Agency wanted to do. And that feasibility study is now with the European Space Agency's mission development team, and they'll actually have a look as to whether or not they want to take one, either, or none of these projects further. If they do decide to take it further, then there is certainly an opportunity to for old and young Australians to get involved in developing that and designing that space probe. And that would be great, considering Australia was one of the first countries to actually launch its own design satellite, RESAT. Back in the days when Woomera was operating, we were actually at the leading edge at that time, and it seems a shame that time has gone on. So hopefully what we're going to see is this happening in 15 years' time. Does take off, then it's thanks to five young Australians that were quite courageous, and Professor Case Bill, who devoted a lot of time into actually developing the networks and the seeds in ESA. And there is an open invitation to Sydney University, who we're talking to with at the moment, and University of Queensland, to actually join into this project and expand it further, because we believe that it's about time Australia got back into the satellite business. And instead of just orbiting the planet, let's go out there.
The System Engineering Society,